This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Last night, the peepers were a chorus of yearning from the pond near my house. It is a welcome sound of spring and of the natural world doing its thing, far from the sirens and horns of urban centers, and a world apart from Facebook updates, YouTube videos, and political shouting matches on TV. Finding an escape from the noise is, as it turns out, kind of pricey. Chloe Shama is a story editor at New Republic, and she observes the proliferation of near-silent luxury cars, noise-canceling headphones, and the growing popularity of silent retreats in an article for the New Republic called Silence is Now a Luxury. Chloe Shama, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
The ordinances against noise, as you discovered, are not a new thing. How have societies tried to control or escape noise in the past?
No, they're not new. They go back to at least the early part of the 20th century. But, you know, the noise as a concern has been around for much, much longer than that. In fact, you could trace it back even to ancient times. And I think I make one mention in my piece about a specific noise restriction that was issued in Elizabethan England, in which men were not allowed to beat their wives after a certain time in the evening because of noise concerns rather than any other concerns. But noise ordinances, as we think of them today, kind of as municipal or governmental regulations, do date back to at least 100 years ago. New York City, in particular, has been seen as kind of at the forefront of noise regulation and noise control, I think probably due to the density of the people living there, and there have been many studies and books written about how residents and the government of New York City has tried to control noise.
I think of the migration away from cities to the suburbs in the 20th century, you know, people who are overloaded with industrial urbanity seeking grass and quiet and trees. Has it been traditionally associated with money and class?
The desire to get away from noise, I think, is probably actually something that transcends class. The kind of interesting component of that desire, or the response to that desire that I was trying to get at, is that there seem to be more and more options for people who do have a lot of disposable income and fewer options for those who don't have a lot of disposable income.
This is something you illustrate now with Amtrak's quiet car, you know, where there are no cell phone conversations allowed. You found also that people are willing to pay premiums for silent flights, something that has not yet been tested, but sounds like there may be a good market for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Amtrak is sort of unique among the phenomena that I was charting in that you don't actually have to pay any extra to sit in the quiet car. But there are studies that have shown that people would be potentially interested in paying a little bit more to be in, for instance, a section of an airplane where people are not able to speak on their cell phones. And I think this was particularly on people's minds a few months ago when the FAA announced that they were going to at least potentially allow that. I'm not exactly sure where it stands immediately, but opened up the possibility that we would all be soon on flights where people were chatting on their phones.
There are also a number of other travel options for those who are seeking silence. Tell us about this proliferation or the popularity of people who are seeking silence.
Yes, it's true. So silent retreats have obviously been around for a long time and are, you know, part of many meditative practices and, you know, some Buddhist practices, I believe, as well. So there's nothing new particularly. But what I found was that these retreats are at least gaining increased media attention, if not, you know, explicitly multiplying in number and availability. There was actually a great New York Times article, I think about a year ago, about a retreat in, I believe it's Arizona, where people are actually on a silent retreat that lasts a number of years. I think it's 3 years. So, you know, people are not only going on these with increased frequency, but extending them for longer periods of time.
You also found a series of travel photography books aiming to get tourists to the quietest spots in various cities, and an iPhone app called Stereo Public that identifies placid urban spaces, encouraging ear witnesses to map these locales. And you also numbered a number of luxury products that are selling silence. What are some of these?
Well, the most obvious one that comes to mind are noise-canceling headphones, which have been around for I guess it's, you know, close to 15 or 20 years, but they're also increasing marketing surrounding cars and vacuum cleaners and I think even hair dryers, where they're advertised as being the quietest on the market. And, you know, these things are generally more expensive than your average vacuum cleaner.
Right, the Bosch dishwasher sells for about $1,700. That says it's the
Right, yeah.
quietest dishwasher. Well, I noticed a no cell phone policy recently on a bus trip. You know, the coach lines are trying to bring themselves up market from the bus lines of old. What do you think is behind this kind of commodification of silence? What are we seeking and why are we willing to pay for it?
I do think there are a couple of things you can look at as potentially interesting explanations. One is just the proliferation of media that we all encounter in our daily lives. And, you know, I'm certainly not the first to point this out, but from the moment we wake up, we check our phones and we check our email. And if you're on social media, you've perhaps received alerts overnight from Facebook or Twitter. And a lot of people I spoke to actually likened this kind of irritation from technology to noise and kind of expanded the idea of noise as irritation more broadly speaking. And so you can see the kind of turn towards silence as a response to this noise in a broad sense. Another reason that's possible is that historically, noise has been a greater concern in times of relative prosperity. You can look at it perhaps as a response to the feeling that we're somewhat in the clear from at least major economic turmoil and therefore able to look at things that perhaps affect our quality of life more than our actual livelihood.
What do we know about what constantly being exposed to noise actually does to human beings?
The people who study noise pollution actually found some kind of really horrifying things about noise. There was a quite famous World Health Organization report that made an estimate based on what they call disability-adjusted years that at least 1 million healthy life years, as they call them, are lost every year from traffic-related noise alone. So I believe that this traffic-related noise included air traffic, which is a huge complaint of people who live under flight paths. And I think also particularly for children, this is being seen to be a problem. There's another study that I cite in which children who are exposed to chronic aircraft noise have more difficulty reading and have worse long-term memory. So, you know, there are definitive drawbacks. So it's not, the concern about silence is not just a frivolous one. It is connected to real, in some instances, life-threatening issues.
Chloe Sciama, story editor for The New Republic, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Chloe wrote about the quiet carization of America in an article for The New Republic. It's called Silence is Now a Luxury Product. We have a link for you to read it quietly yourself at wordofmouthradio.org. Does the thought of reading poetry make you want to head for the hills? A contemporary poet tries to convince you otherwise. When Word of Mouth continues, poetry for people who hate poetry.